Good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for coming. I am Penny Carson, the current president of the Cumberland Club, and I welcome you here. This evening, we're going to be talking about trains. Today's special speaker is Patricia Quinn, who joined the Northern New England's Passenger Rail Authority in 2000 as a temporary consultant hired to plan the inaugural celebration of the Downeaster train. The Downeaster, by the way, is a great name. Everybody knows. It's familiar. It's easy for them to say. And we do think we are the only people are the Downeast people, so it's easy for us to remember that. That's right. We count. Ms. Quinn served as the manager in marketing until 2005 when she was named executive director. As executive director, Patricia oversees all aspects of the day-to-day operation of the Downeaster, which serves nearly a 500,000 travelers each year with 5 daily round trips between Portland, Maine and Boston and the 10 stops in between there. Patricia is the mother of 2 children. She has a Bachelor's of Science degree in Business Administration and more than 20 years of experience in hotel management, tourism, transportation, and public relations. Speaking for the Cumberland Club, we welcome you to the Cumberland Club and thank you so much for coming. You look good, tall.
Thank you. And I don't need this mic either, but I'm going to use it because it's being recorded. And I'm not going to stand behind this podium because I use my arms too much. Thank you very much for inviting me here. It's a pleasure to be here. And Brenda's on the board of directors of the Northern New England Passenger Rail Authority and asked me to be here today to talk a little bit about the Downeaster service as it exists today and a little bit about our vision for the future, what comes next. We've got some very exciting things on the horizon, and I think that we've got the potential to really do some wonderful things going forward. Natalie Allen is our marketing director, and she's here, and she's going to help me along with this PowerPoint. So the first thing I want to do is talk to you a little bit about what the Northern New England Passenger Rail Authority is. We're a pretty small organization. A third of us are here tonight. And we were created by the Maine State Legislature in the 90s for the purposes of restoring passenger rail service to Maine and then operating service within Maine. Our chairman is Marty Eisenstein, and he puts it best, we don't run trains, we make trains run. And so we are kind of the business managers. We handle the money, and we facilitate the operation of the Downeaster. It's important for you to understand, first of all, that the Downeaster is not an Amtrak train. The Downeaster is Maine's train. And NEPRA has a contract with Amtrak to operate that service on its behalf. So there's a distinction there. There are about 16 states in the union that have state-supported service, like Maine does. And so it makes it a little bit different than a regular Amtrak service. So what do? Because I think it's important to put it into context. I've kind of broken it down to 5 bullet points we're going to talk about. First of all, partnerships. We maintain lots of partnerships. We do the promotion for the service. We stay very focused on our passengers. Participation is an important part that we participate, sometimes to the dismay of our operating partners, but we participate in all aspects of the service. And we're very focused on performance because there's something about passenger rail. You may like trains or you may not like trains, but it's not a nimble business. It's a very infrastructure-intensive business, and it's expensive. And we can't afford, particularly in these kinds of economic times, to have trains for the sake of having trains. And that's why our board of directors keeps us accountable, that there are certain metrics and performance standards that we must maintain to make sure that this continues to be a solid investment for the state of Maine and Northern New England. Starting with partnerships, I'm going to start first with our operating partners. I talked a little bit about Amtrak. We do have a contract with Amtrak. It's a 20-year agreement started back in 2001 when the service started running for them to provide the equipment for the service, the crews, which are 2 conductors and an engineer, the train sets. We run 2 train sets as part of our regular service on a daily basis. And they also do the maintenance of the equipment. We also contract with Amtrak to do our reservations. So if you want to make a reservation for the Downeaster, you actually kind of get bumped over to Julie if you're on the phone or Amtrak.com. So that's our relationship with Amtrak, and they are our primary operating partner. An interesting thing about passenger rail, which is different than other kinds of transportation, is that we operate on a road that's owned by other people. And that creates kind of a new layer of complexity and a new requirement for partnerships. Pan Am Railways owns the line between Portland and the New Hampshire-Massachusetts state line, 78 miles, and the remaining 36 miles is owned by the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority, known as the T, if you travel in Boston. And it's very important that through Amtrak, we have operating agreements with Pan Am and with the T to operate over their lines, because they already have business. Pan Am runs a freight business on their line, the T runs commuter business, and we're kind of leasing space on that. So it's important that we share and maintain a good partnership with our host railroads. And actually, Mr. Fink from Pan Am is here tonight, which I'm very happy to see. Also, Epicurean Feast is our food service provider. We are the only Amtrak service in the country that operates its own food service. And that's really kind of turned out to be a neat thing for us, because it's given us an opportunity to establish a personality and really create an identity for the Downeaster service. And enables us to do things like have Amato sandwiches on board and shipyard beer. It enables us to have lobster rolls in the summertime and clam chowder in the wintertime. And we do those things much more cost-effectively than Amtrak does on a national basis. And also our station communities are part of our operating partners, because all of this, we do serve 8 stations in 3 states between Portland and Boston, and each one of those stations is owned and operated and maintained by the municipalities in which they're located. And so part of our coordination efforts is to maintain a good, solid working relationship with these folks, because at the end of the day, the goal is to provide a seamless, smooth, positive transportation experience for our passengers. And so it takes a lot of coordination to get all of these independent people kind of working towards the same goals. We also have service partners. From a transportation standpoint, it's important to understand that rail service is not the answer to everybody's transportation problems. Passenger rail is one part of a coordinated a transportation network. It's part of a system. It provides an option for people. And we cannot exist alone. We connect to highways because people are going to always need to have cars, but it's also important that we connect to other transportation providers. A lot of transit is located at each of our stations. We work very well with Concord Coach Lines that we share the Portland station with, and so we have to maintain a good solid relationship with all of the transit providers along all of our communities. And of course, advocacy, Train Riders Northeast, and Wayne Davis is here tonight, is the organization that actually started the initiative to restore passenger rail service to Maine back in the 1990s. And it's also a key point that this initiative came from the people, and that's who Train Riders on a regular basis keeps us accountable back to the people of Northern New England to provide the service that they want. Train Riders also provides supports a volunteer program that puts train hosts on each of the trains. About a third of our trains have a volunteer that provides information for people, just kind of an ambassador of goodwill, and has really become an integral part of our service. And also several of the stations have train hosts as well. And these are all volunteers that are coordinated by Train Riders Northeast. Promotion is a huge part of what we do. Our marketing budget is about $480,000 a year, and Natalie does a fantastic job of trying to communicate all of the different messages that we have to try to get people to ride the Downeaster and make them aware. We've worked really hard to develop a brand and make the Downeaster unique, so when people say the Downeaster train, that kind of has a different image in people's mind than maybe a regular Amtrak train. It's very market-based. We do advertising, which is paid media. She participates in lots of trade shows, lots of electronic and social media, which I'm very glad she's here, because personally I don't want to Twitter anybody. and a lot of just grassroots communication-based networking kinds of relationships. And here's just a sample of some of the different programs that we have. We've just finishing up our Train to Maine campaign located in Boston, which if you come into North Station, you're going to see Take the Train to Maine all over the place. We do promotions for college students. We have a special ticket. We give them 6 rides for $76. Promote to people going to ball games, business people. We have a pass that's in coordination with the bus company. Lots of different things. And thanks to Natalie's hard work, our ad campaigns have been the recipient of the AdWheel Awards, which are the American Public Transportation Association, which is kind of the granddaddy of public transportation agencies in the country, gives out awards every year for excellence in marketing and advertising. And Natalie's programs have won for the last 4 years in a row. And I'm confident we're going to win again, because she'll be in trouble if we don't. And participation. We participate in the service on a number of different levels in service quality, making sure our passengers are taken care of. One of our staff members, Brian Beeler, is the manager of passenger services, and his goal is to focus on the passengers and make sure that people have what they need, make sure that signs are up, ticket machines are working. He greets all of our groups. There's a picture of him there down in the bottom. There's Natalie up there with her Train to Main shades at North Station trying to give out T-shirts and beach balls. We were the first passenger train in the country to have Wi-Fi service, and in fact we had Wi-Fis on our train beginning in June of 2008. Amtrak just started rolling out Wi-Fi on their trains a few months ago and don't even have all of them outfitted yet. So we're kind of be trailblazers, and that's thanks to our board, who pushes us to be first in everything. We do cute little things, like we put wreaths on the front of our trains in the wintertime, and also participate in the investment in the infrastructure improvements that are required, because while it's very nice to worry about things from the train up, maintaining a solid roadbed and keeping the railroad in good working order is something we work with Pan Am on, and we participate in many capital projects that benefit all of us. And last but certainly not least, the passengers, again, are our primary focus, because at the end of the day, when all of the contracts and the politics and the financing are put aside, this is really a business, and that's how we approach it. It's a business. Our organization is small and it's nimble, and we're allowed to make decisions that a business would make that you need to do day to day in terms of fares and promotions and customer service. Also, in terms of passengers, who are they? And people say sometimes, who rides the Downeaster? And my response is, who doesn't ride the Downeaster? We have a little bit of everybody. We have trains spread out throughout the entire day, and each one kind of has its own niche market and its own personality. Business travelers, college students, families going to ball games, people just going away to Boston for a day, senior citizens, couples looking for a night out, people going to medical appointments. We have lots of really neat programs. We actually have a program called the Downeaster Discovery Program. It's $15 round trip for school groups that are going to Boston on educational trips. We transport about 6,000 kids a year to Boston on field trips. We also have a program with the American Cancer Society, which we offer a low fare for a referred patient and a companion who's referred to Boston to go for medical treatments. Because who wants to go through that for a day and then have to sit in traffic and be uncomfortable coming back? So lots of different things that we do. We have passengers of all different walks of life. About the service itself, the Downeaster makes 5 round trips a day between Portland and Boston. It's 116 miles. Our maximum speed is 79 miles an hour. We do that using 2 sets of equipment. One set of equipment makes 2 round trips a day, and the other one makes 3 round trips a day. They don't sit still very long at all. And we do serve 8 intermediate stations in 3 states. And all of those things do make for a little bit of a complex operation. In terms of performance, what do we actually achieve in all these things? Well, here's a little bit about our ridership history and some of the progression, where we started and where we are now. We started operating on December 15th of 2001. Our fiscal year runs from July 1st through June 30th, so these numbers are based on that time frame. We first started running, the travel time between Portland and Boston was 2 hours and 45 minutes, and we had 4 round trips a day. We had 7 full-time stations only and 2 part-time stations, only a total of 9. Durham was only a part-time station Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We were not serving Woburn, and Old Orchard was a seasonal stop. And when we kind of came out of the gate after 12 years of hard work to get the service started, we kind of reached our initial projected goals right off in the beginning of 250,000 people. And people said, isn't that wonderful? And it's a novelty, and it's going to wear off, and nobody's going to ride it. And if we hadn't paid attention, that might have happened. But we realized as we started operating the service that it was important to continue to make investments and make improvements to meet the needs of the traveling public that would enable us to grow our business. And that's what we started to do. By 2006, we'd reduced the travel time from 2 hours and 45 minutes to 2 hours and 30 minutes. And you can see by the little jump in those lines there in terms of the number of riders that it really had a significant impact. Our ridership increased 36%. By 2008, we went to 5 round trips a day. Gas prices went up to $4 a gallon. We added another station. Durham became a full-time station. And if you look at those last 3 bars there, you'll see that now we've grown our business. Gas prices are no longer $4 a gallon. But again, as we finished our fiscal year 2010, we exceeded last year's ridership numbers by 2%. And we're just delighted to be retaining all of our customers and to be moving as many people as we are. Also, in terms of customer satisfaction, Amtrak sends out surveys to all of their passengers, and they rate different elements of their service experience, and they kind of compare them among different services. Ours are among the best in the nation, and here are just a few examples of some of the categories. And again, this is something the board is very focused on in terms of making sure that we're delivering a quality product, and you can see overall satisfaction of the service is 91 compared to Amtrak 82 nationally. So we think we do a pretty good job. But at the end of the day, it's really more than just a train ride, because all those things are very nice. But this service does not cover all of its operating costs. This is an investment that the state makes in transportation and part of the a mixed-use transportation policy. Our operating budget every year is about $14 million, and we collect about $7.5 million in revenues. So that leaves about $6.5 million, or 45%, 46% of our costs that need to be covered in some other way, need to be publicly subsidized. Well, the fact of the matter is all means of transportation are subsidized in one way, shape, or form. Ours, unfortunately, happen to be on our balance sheet, which makes it a little bit awkward for me. But really isn't unlike airports or bus companies or anything else that operates. It's just how it is. And it's important to understand that we're very upfront about this. And everybody knows, the Department of Transportation knows, the governor knows, the legislature knows, but the reason it's worth the additional investment is because there are benefits which far exceed the amount of money that the state puts in to contribute to keep the service operating. And I'm going to explain to you a little bit about that. First of all, there are the transportation benefits, where this service provides mobility and connectivity which didn't exist before. It connects the seaside communities of Old Orchard Beach to really the economic heartbeat of New England, which is Boston, which is an important commerce connection. It also provides mobility. I don't know if you've noticed, but occasionally we have bad winters here. And it's hard to travel on the roads, and it's impossible to travel on the airlines, but the train often is the only mode of transportation that's moving in a snowstorm. Also, Maine is the oldest state in the nation. And as our population ages, people either can't afford or just don't want to drive in the cities, but they still may want to go someplace. So this is a nice option for them. And also there's the mobility and ADA compatibility, where the service is 100% ADA compatible, and people can very easily get on and off and go about and travel around northern New England. An interesting story, I did start off in marketing for the service, and used to answer the phone a lot more than I do now. And a lady called me a few months after the Downeaster started, and this is a true story. She called me and she had this shaky voice, and I could tell she was a little bit of an older woman. And she called and said, "I just wanted to call and thank you, because my husband has been in a wheelchair and we haven't left the state of Maine in 15 years. And we went to Boston last week and he wasn't embarrassed, he wasn't awkward, and we were able to do it, and we're going to do it again. You've changed our lives." So those are the kinds of things that are really important, that you kind of say on those Visa commercials, priceless, you know. Also, transportation is expensive, and this is kind of a chart from a transportation economist site, which talks about the cost of transportation as it relates to people on a regular basis. The slide on the left is a slide of Cumberland County. The yellow that you see are the areas where people spend less than 30% of their total income to pay for their housing costs. In the dark blue is where people spend more than 30% of their income on their housing costs. Now, the interesting thing is that as people live further out, it's less expensive probably to have a house, buy a house in Standish than it is in downtown Portland. But if your city center is in Portland, you have to travel back and forth. So the cost of your mortgage is a little bit misleading, because you have to pay for transportation, more cost for transportation. The slide on the right shows, the dark blue shows the areas in Cumberland County where people are spending more than 45% of their income on housing and transportation. That's a lot of money. And those are important things to think about. And that's why investments in public transportation actually translate into keeping money in people's pockets so they have more money to spend on other things, going to movies, joining clubs, getting their hair done, going to the theater, whatever it is that they might want to do, that it all costs money. And this is a way to help keep money in your pockets. There are also other economic benefits, and they're a little bit challenging sometimes to quantify, but there's an agency that is kind of a national expert in trying to quantify some of these benefits associated with transportation developments called the Center for Neighborhood Technology. They're based in Chicago, and in 2008, we asked them to look at the Downeaster Corridor and make an assessment of what the benefits of the Downeaster would be in terms of from a development perspective. And they did, and their projections were that by the year 2030, we would see along the Downeaster Corridor, and that's from Boston through to Brunswick, because that's where we projected to go at the time, cumulatively $7.2 billion in new construction that was related to the fact that there was a rail line operating on that corridor. That's 42,000 new housing units and 6.8 million square feet of retail space. The fact of the matter is, folks, that Boston is becoming more and more congested, and as people are looking to move out or being pushed out, we're the next best thing here, and people are looking for places to live and relocate their businesses and have a transportation connection back and forth. Also, this will create 17,800 jobs. Annually, this will keep $244 million in the pockets of people that live in this region that they're not going to be paying on additional cars and transportation expenses, and it's going to contribute $76 million in tax revenues to state of Maine coffers. Now, again, when you go back and you say $6.5 million, that sounds like a lot, but you can see that the benefits far outweigh those investments. And those seem like really big numbers. You know, oh, my God, not $7.6 billion. That's not going to happen up here in our neck in the woods. But when we first started the service and we started hearing those kinds of numbers, they seemed a little difficult to believe. But as time's gone on, they're very, very believable. Right now in the city, in the towns of Saco and Biddeford, there's over $300 million of development projects that are going on in those abandoned mills. Those mills were abandoned for decades. Nobody wanted anything to do with them. And when the Downeaster came and that connection was provided to Boston, the economic center of New England, people started buying them and redeveloping them. And look down the bottom right, how beautiful that is. That was a building with no windows in it that was ready to be torn down. And the developers in both of those communities will tell you that these investments were made in that location because the Downeaster was there. In Old Orchard Beach, 808 new residential housing units have been built since 2005. Down the bottom left-hand side there, that's the Queen Victoria, which is a new condominium complex that was built in a place where there was, I think, a candy shop and a French fry store, and now it's a beautiful complex. And Old Orchard Beach is actually considering expanding service to their community on a year-round basis because they're seeing their service, their season expand, where everything started Memorial Day and ends on Labor Day. And if you live around this area and if you've been there, you know that like they kind of turn the lights on and then they turn the lights off again. But somebody who only has the ability to make a living for 4 months a year, if you give them an extra month, that's a pretty good deal. That's worth something. And those are the things that we do. And we serve that community from April through October, and they're looking to try to keep that, extend the ends of that service. In Dover, New Hampshire, the Children's Museum a few years ago of New Hampshire was relocated to Dover from Portsmouth because they wanted to be within walking distance of the rail line. And in January, when it was announced that NEPA received a $35 million grant to expand service to Brunswick, the economic development director for Dover, New Hampshire, a town of 26,000 people, booming metropolis, received a call from a West Coast developer who wanted to talk to him about building a conference center and hotel adjacent to the train station because they felt that the synergy between Freeport and Boston was going to be so significant that it would be a great location. And those conversations are ongoing, and that's still an active proposition. In Exeter, New Hampshire, they just got a grant to upgrade or to remodel the old luggage house, where they kept years ago, where the station is now is actually where the station used to be, but the station is not a station anymore. It's a retail complex, and there's a strip mall attached to it. In fact, there's a little convenience store in there called Jerry's Variety, and that's where actually where we keep our ticketing machine. But there's an old luggage house there that was an apartment, and the town just recently applied for and received a grant from the state for a couple $100,000 that they're matching with about $100,000 of their own town money. Now, this is a community of like 8,900 people. This is not a, but they see such potential in this that they're investing money to make that a real station. And there's a closed down shoe factory right on the other side that's being looked at for potential development. That's why these investments are being made. In Brunswick, Maine, we haven't even gotten there yet. A private developer is spending $22 million on a mixed-use, transit-oriented development project. That building that you see on the left there that's under construction is complete. The way it's set up, there's kind of a building that's its twin that's going to go on the other side. And when we got the word that the grant was finalized and our money was coming to expand the service to Brunswick, they signed the deal with the bank, and they're breaking ground on a 60-room hotel on that complex coming up. And the University of New Hampshire spent $913,000 renovating their train station, which was the Dairy Bar, and making it, bringing back some of the historic characteristics that it had, and changing it from kind of a greasy spoon restaurant to a sustainable foods establishment that's really become a showpiece. So these people wouldn't be investing this money if they didn't see value, and that's already a lot of money. I should add it all up and come to it. Remind me to do that. But it's a significant amount of money that we can see that's already be putting in and to demonstrate that this is really a sound investment for Northern New England. So what's the next step? Well, we're going to Brunswick. Honest to God, we've been talking about this for a long time. I've given lots of speeches about we hope to go to Brunswick, but we really are going to Brunswick. We applied for a grant through the high-speed intercity passenger rail program that was made available through the Obama administration, through the Federal Railroad Administration, received $35 million, and we're going to upgrade 30 miles of track between Portland and Brunswick on track that's mostly owned by Pan Am Railways to restore passenger service to that line. What that service is going to look at is we're going to have two new stations, one in Freeport, one in Brunswick. We're going to operate two daily round trips. We're going to extend two of our existing trips between Brunswick all the way to Boston. And then we've got a couple of equipment moves because we overnight the equipment in Portland. So there'll be one additional round trip between Portland and Brunswick. And service is going to begin. I'll tell you that construction is going to begin August 15th. The rail's coming in about a week and a half. Construction's going to begin on August 15th, and service will begin in 2012. So that's a sure bet. We're excited about that. And that's important for a number of reasons. One, it supports tourism, because Freeport is the number one tourist destination in the state of Maine. And I think Boston people are probably the number one shoppers in New England. So we're going to bring people right to L.L. Bean's doorstep and let them people come and generate tourism without adding any more cars to the nightmare in Freeport, which is a good thing. And we can even go without being in a car. I mean, I personally would go to Freeport more often if I wasn't stressed out about trying to park 100 miles away from where I wanted to be. It also provides connectivity to the mid-coast, because in Brunswick there's a line that's owned by the state of Maine that goes all the way to Rockland. There's excursion service operated on that line now, but there is connectivity, and also, you know, Rockland and the mid-coast of Maine, as we know, is kind of a strong economic center for our own economy. It supports freight rail efforts because we're also upgrading part of the freight line that runs north of Portland, and it will stimulate the economy because it's going to create jobs and it's going to do all of the things, and we've already seen it do some of the things there that we've seen in other parts of the line. But that is really not the end. And there is much more to come, and it's important for us to look ahead. And in order for us to get ahead, we have to follow a few key steps. The Federal Railroad Administration is going to keep the high-speed intercity passenger rail program ongoing, that there'll be money available at least for the next few years for states to invest in passenger rail and to make key investments that are going to stimulate the economy. But they require a plan. So what we've done is we've got the Brunswick project going, and we've already done quite a bit of work with Pan Am and the MBTA to look at what other improvements we need to make. But they're requiring us to really do a lot of research and due diligence and come up with a solid plan, a corridor development plan that will look at the entire corridor from Boston to Portland and identify what are the critical needs. What do you want to do next? What's it going to cost? What are the impacts going to be? So we can apply for future monies to make further investments in the line, and that's what we're doing. Now, again, because this runs through three states, and because there are different stakeholders involved, there's a lot more to this than you would think. And so NEPRA is trying to take the lead with the support of our board to really be the catalyst to start this multi-state discussion and this multi-partner discussion of what do we need to do collectively to improve transportation and commerce between Boston and Maine, and keep Maine connected to the rest of the universe through some key investments. So that's what we're trying to work on right now. So we've applied for a grant for $750,000 for planning, and they'll hope to make those announcements later in the summer. And we were fortunate enough to get letters of support from our congressional delegation members on that. Some of our existing needs and some of the things that we want to do as part of this plan is continue to make investments in the core service. And what I can't stress enough is that the Downeaster is a great service, but it is the core and it is the backbone to any future investments. So we need to continue to look to do what we can to strengthen that core. Some of the challenges that we have and some of the impediments to really growing the service to the place it needs to be grown is travel time. Travel time is 2 hours and 25 minutes between Portland and Boston. We would get a lot more riders if it was closer to 2 hours. You all know that. You'd all ride it more often if it was closer to 2 hours. You don't have to be afraid. I know. And also frequency. And that's another thing. We need to have more trains. Well, people say that all the time. Why don't you put on another train? Well, I can't just put on another train because there's no room for it. He's running 14 freight trains a day. The T's got 35, commuter trains a day. You can't just run all these trains out there on one track because they're going to bump into each other, and that would be a bad thing. So what we need to do is we need to look at and identify some places where we can add capacity. And when we say add capacity, it's putting back second tracks and third tracks in places and making enough room so that we can all operate our businesses safely and efficiently. So we've got some gaps in our schedule. For instance, we leave Portland at 6 in the morning and at 8 in the morning, and that 7 o'clock up there shows we're going to leave Brunswick. And then there's nothing leaving Portland between 8 in the morning and 1 in the afternoon. That's kind of a big gap. If you look down the bottom, the northbound trains, there's nothing that leaves Boston in the morning between 11 a.m. and 5 p.m. And then in the afternoon, it's the same thing. The reason is we run two train sets. It's a five-hour round trip, so you got 5 hours in between your different departures. So what we want to do is we want to look at... Okay. If we added two more round trips a day, introduce one more set of equipment into the service and added two more round trips every day, we could fill in those gaps. We could have a 6, an 8, a 10:30, a 1, a 2:30, a 6 o'clock in the evening departure from Portland, and an 8 o'clock. And the same thing balancing that nice, we could add an additional round trip a day to Brunswick, and it would really complete the schedule very nicely. Additionally, if we got the travel time down to 2.5 hours, we could make all of this work and these trains could go. It's going to take about $110 million to accomplish that from a capital investment standpoint. It's a lot of money. It's a long corridor. And that's what it costs. We're not making any apologies. It costs a lot of money to pave 295 too. But these are long-range investments that we need to stay focused on so that we can continue to move our business forward. And the fact of the matter is, our studies indicate that if these improvements are made, our ridership is going to go from 474,000 people a year to over 800,000 people a year. Significant. Now you think about those economic impacts, you think about those developers, those things, what they wanted to do. If we increased our ridership by that much, how would that impact the rest of it? Next thing we need to look at is Portland. And we've talked about, I'm sure you've seen in the newspaper, about expanding service to different parts of Maine and doing different things. Where our station is currently in Portland is very handy for a number of reasons. One, it's right off the interstate, and you can drive your car right off there, and you can park it, and you can go in, and you can take a train, and you can take a bus. And that's all a very good thing. But not everybody who comes here, especially people who come from the south and want to come to Portland for the day, they don't have a car. And they're really not within walking distance of anything. And where we've really seen a lot of the big investments and the most significant investments along our station communities are in places where there are downtown train stations. There's also a situation where we're kind of cramped there. We don't have a lot of room, and if you're going to run different kinds of services and you're going to have trains coming from the north and you're going to have train coming in from Boston, the ability to have something like we have on the right there, which is a middle platform and a track on each side so trains can come from different places, people can get off from one and go on another, would really be key. Plus, where our station is now is off on a branch line. And in order to get to Brunswick, when we start running service to Brunswick, we're going to have to back the train up over a mile, put it in reverse, back it up, put it in forward, and have it go up because we kind of go off on a branch line. You can kind of see that little thing down the left-hand corner. So part of our study is to look at, given these challenges, is there a better location to put the Portland Transportation Center? That brings up a whole bunch of questions we're not going to talk about today, but that's why it's important to study it and make this a public process that people can be involved in so that we can really decide, should we invest in where we are and make improvements there, or should we look at moving the location and where should it be? And again, once these kinds of improvements are made, we get our travel time down, we can increase our frequency, we get a station that gives us a little bit more flexibility, we can start seriously, and we already have started looking at, but it makes it, those things need to be done before we can seriously make steps to really expand the service within Maine, and there is a ton of potential. Lewiston-Auburn, when we go to Brunswick, we go through Yarmouth Junction, and kind of if you take a left-hand turn there, you can go up on the state-owned line and get to Auburn, Maine. Or there's Lewiston up there as well. So we're actually working with the state now to look at what some of the feasibility would be for service in that way. Beyond Auburn is Montreal, and there's a long-term vision to look at connectivity to Montreal. There's the Mountain Division. We just had a bond initiative that was passed in this last election that provided some money, and there's some discussion about upgrading that at some point in time. There's the line that goes to the heart of the Midcoast from Brunswick to Rockland, and there's also an ongoing discussion about providing commuter rail service between different locations. None of these things are really even logical or feasible until we continue to make the core investments in the service. And beyond Maine, the opportunities exist as well. As part of this discussion of a regional transportation plan, we can look at a long-term vision of not only Portland being connected to Boston, but also looking at long-term, making adjustments to other rail lines that connect possibly to Worcester. You know, we've heard forever about the Big Dig, and you have North Station and South Station aren't connected. Well, you know, the reality is they probably never will be. It's about a $4 billion project to connect those two stations. But there are other ways around, and with sound planning, sound investment, and money made available, if we're smart and we work together as a region, we can get to a point that we can provide connectivity, maybe coming off and going through Lowell to Worcester and maybe connecting to the Northeast Corridor that way. These things are in the future, but they're all a potential if we play our cards right now. So in looking to the future, the important thing is first of all, to support and sustain the existing service. That's from an operating perspective, making sure we have money to pay our bills to keep our doors open and keep transporting people, and making sure that we have adequate capital funds to continue to make the investments that we need to run an efficient service. We also want to lead the initiative to collaborate with our partners, our operating partners, our transportation partners, and our state partners to come up with a plan that includes Maine, that doesn't leave us out, you know, geographically remote in the right upper right-hand corner of the United States, but connects us to northern New England and makes us part of the commerce center for this region, to complete our corridor plan and then be smart about it. You don't want to do something that you're not going to get, and we compete to win. And that's how we approached Brunswick, and that's how we're going to approach future projects. Looking at this, you can see from universities, stimulating new jobs and biotechnical, supporting tourism, construction and railroad jobs, there's really a lot to gain from this service still. We've contributed a lot, and there's a lot more to gain. And it's time to get on board. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Patricia. This is an exciting service for the state of Maine, and I know all of you in the audience join me in thanking Patricia for being here this evening. So in the tradition of the Chamberlain Lecture Series, I'm happy to reveal some questions from our audience. And so let me begin with the first, which is, why rail? Our questioner says she gets what and how, but it's not the same as every other means of transportation. What is it about rail that we believe in and will pay for?
A few things. That's a really good question. One, it's comfortable. It's reliable. It's quiet. Wayne Davis put it one of the best ways one time. It's civilized. It's really a nice way to travel. Plus, more importantly, in today's society, you can text while you ride.
So you mentioned the tremendous advantage that the reduction in travel time between Portland and Boston would make. So our questioner asks, what would the time for the run between Portland and Boston be without stops? And have you considered an express train a day so that we might be able to do this quicker?
Another good question. Each stop takes us approximately 5 minutes by the time they decelerate and stop and then accelerate again. We only stop for a minute or less in most places. And we have considered that, and we've talked about it quite extensively with the board. At this point in time, it's really a revenue decision that to determine which stops to exclude, where our money comes from. And there are many of our trains that we pick up significant riders and revenue in a certain location, and it's really a roll of the dice to determine whether you're going to make those up by more people riding from Portland because it's a shorter travel time than perhaps a station in New Hampshire. So it's something we are considering, and it's something we may actually implement in the relatively near future, but it's really hard to assess at this point in time.
Well, along those lines, one of our audience members wonders, is New Hampshire participating in funding?
The train does make three stops in New Hampshire, and the state of New Hampshire does not contribute to the operating expenses of the Downeaster. The municipalities support the stations. The state built the stations. The municipalities support the operation of the stations. And we were successful in getting a $1.6 million allocation of federal funds to do a capital projects. So the state, from a political perspective, does not contribute. Ridership from the state of New Hampshire for riders is about $1.6 million. And about 30% of our riders. So that's the contribution. So from our perspective, you have to be careful not to bite off your nose to spite your face. Hopefully, some of these processes, some of these plans will create a more collaborative dialogue. Right now, rail is not really part of New Hampshire's strategic transportation plan, at least not developing it in our quarter. They're very focused on developing their own quarter, that runs through from Boston through Concord, Manchester and Concord, and they really haven't identified how they're going to pay for that either. But, you know, we're the deer go, we lead, and they're live free or die, and we're kind of an example of that.
Well, we've had a number of questions along this line, but there is some interest in talking about the distance and the possibility of connecting North and South Station in Boston. Obviously, this has been something that's been in the works, according to one of our members emerita, since 1923. There were some questions about why the Big Dig might not have included an underground rail link between North and South Station, and wondering how we can really do a good job of accessing the Amtrak network nationwide when we come into North Station and many of the trains that travel south depart from South Station.
Those opportunities have improved significantly since we started running service. I'm not going to comment on Massachusetts transportation decisions and why the connection between the two stations wasn't included in the Big Dig. The fact is that it's not. There's a few ways to work around it. One is that there's a wonderful subway system. It's virtually seamless from the station where you can take a subway, the Orange Line, go directly to Back Bay Station. All Amtrak trains stop at Back Bay, and you get on a subway, you ride eight stops, and you're at Back Bay, and you can catch your Amtrak train. It's not the best scenario. It's not the easiest, but it's probably the most viable option. If you have a lot of luggage, we usually suggest to people that you call a taxi and do that. We continue to try to provide information and communication to people about how to make that connection. It's not 100% seamless, but there are, again, are improvements and changes that are being made in other rail infrastructure in the greater Boston area that may open up some other opportunities down the road. This is kind of a long-term thing, but for the meantime, that's really the best we can offer.
So with respect to the special passes made available to college students, how many schools and campuses do you serve between Portland and Boston?
a lot. I actually don't know the number. Do you have any idea what the number is?
Sixty-three
that are considered close to the rail line, which is considerable. And then once we get to Brunswick, we're right at the doorstep of Bowdoin College. And that, in fact, one of the things, the interesting thing about that project in Brunswick, it's called Main Street Station, is that it really connects. If you've been up there, you know there's like there's downtown Brunswick, then there's the railroad tracks, and then there's Bowdoin College. And what they're trying to do is really integrate that so it's more of a seamless that Bowdoin College becomes part of the downtown and vice versa. So we're about to add a new one.
What's the current annual tax revenue that the Downeaster generates for Maine?
Again, that's something, what's the current tax revenue? Hard to quantify that. I mean, I couldn't put a dollar figure on it. We did a study back in 2003, and I wanted to say at that point in time it was, I think it was about $10 million or something in that neighborhood back then. Again, our ridership was only a fraction. It was about 60% less than what it is now. So my guess is that it would be, you know, at least that much more. So my guess is it's probably somewhere in the magnitude of $20 million.
Are there any plans to return service to Sunday River?
Those kinds of discussions really come with kind of the next phase of development. And again, the state of Maine Department of Transportation is undergoing a study to look at what the potential is for service in the Lewis and Auburn area. I think that the Sunday River discussion would probably come in that. If the investment were made to upgrade that rail line, I think that would become part of that whole package to do that, but it's really not something that's specifically on our radar screen.
Sort of an allied question. Regarding the real cost of housing without transportation, what's NEPRA doing to advocate for rail outside the Downeaster route?
We actually try to stay very supportive of everybody's initiative. I actually spent two of my days last week, which turned out to four, with transportation in Ohio, helping the folks in Ohio move their rail initiative forward. They actually applied for a grant and received $400 million to build a rail corridor between from Cleveland through Columbus to Cincinnati, and don't, A, have all the support that they need to do that, and B, really don't understand all the pieces that go into it. So spent a few days out there just kind of helping them understand what questions to ask as they go forward through their planning process. Also, again, we support the initiatives that our other partner states have, because there are some, you know, projects that Massachusetts may have that would be on the line, that on the MBTA line, and we want to make sure that we understand we're a network. Everybody's connected. Also, in terms of this particular pot of funding, this is the first time that intercity passenger rail has ever received any funding for capital projects. So it's really in our best interest to help all of our colleagues make their projects successful so that the industry will be successful as a whole.
When will the train go to Montreal?
Probably after the day I stopped dyeing my hair blonde.
And finally, what's your most memorable train ride ever?
Good or bad? I get to decide. Well, I guess Natalie's going to know the one that comes to mind. It was on the good bad scale. It was definitely a bad. We had we used to do a party for our commuters, and we'd go down in December and we'd set up a car and just to appreciate our commuters. This is in the day when we had 50 commuters. Now we have 200 of them, so it's become a little bit more difficult. But anyway, we ran into some mechanical problems. And also, it was also Toys for Tots Day, and it was a big school group, so we had like 150 kids on the train. Plus, we were waiting to get to the commuters, and we ran into significant mechanical problems. And it took us 4 hours to get to Boston with these kids on there, a good part of the way. Then when we got there, the commuters were there, and they were a little bit angry. And they indulged themselves in a lot of the beverages that we were providing for them. And so by the time we finally got home, it was very memorable. on a more positive note, I think it would be hard, really, to top the inaugural run. that I had the privilege of participating in and kind of seeing this whole thing going. When you plan something for so long, and then when the train pulled into Haverhill the very first day, and after, you know, coordinating with people and all these meetings and everything's on a piece of paper, but when the train finally showed up and there were red, white, and blue buntings hanging off of buildings, and there were kids with flags, and there were bands playing, and it kind of became real, it was very exciting, and I'm really, really looking forward to that first train rolling into Brunswick.
Well, on behalf of the club, I want to say thank you so much to our audience for coming out on a summer night to enjoy this wonderful presentation about an incredibly important piece of our infrastructure. Patricia Quinn is a treasure, and we are extremely lucky in Maine to have an individual of her caliber looking after this wonderful piece of what makes it a great place to live. So I hope you will join me in thanking Patricia Quinn for being here. I'd also like to take a moment to thank two individuals who've had a tremendous impact on the ongoing success of the train. Wayne Davis, the grandfather of our train from train riders down east, and David Fink from Pan Am Railroad. Thank you so much for being here. And thank you this evening. Please join us for dinner, and we'll see you again next month for the Chamberlain Lecture Series. Thank you.